Not often or ever does somebody get to beat me in the inspirational department that cage, and Michael Chandler did that.
Oh,
he made a choice that he was not going to give in, and it was not smart, man. His body numerous times tried to give him a way out so he didn't have to take the damage he ultimately incurred. Thank God it was not five rounds. And with that, welcome to Early Stoppage, a show where the news of the day is usually given just enough time and sometimes not enough. If this is your first time stopping by, we thank you. Get ready for something you won't find anywhere else. I'm John Franklin, and I'm joined by the God, Father of Fight Night Picks, Craig Allen. Craig, how are you?
Odell Beckham, who? We don't need that guy. John Franklin, you weren't totally surprised by the Browns jersey, but let me tell you something. I must have sprinkled a little bit of Browns talk in this week's preview and prediction video that we had out earlier on in the week. And every single time I do, people just get straight up disappointed. They're like, no, you really like the Browns? No, yeah, I really do like the Browns. Like, I'm dead serious. Every week, parked in front of the TV, stick with my team, Baker Mayfield jersey. So, yeah, listen, I'm excited about football, but this is not a football show. Good stuff.
Listen, I think that there's a lot of different ways in which me being older than you, I can give you some guidance to some things I've experienced before you've experienced. I lost Odell Beckham once. I know what it feels like to lose him. And listen, things are going great for us in the Giants, man. We got Danny Dimes. We got Saquon. We got Sterling Kadari. We got Kenny. Things aren't going great, but I'm sure they'll be great for you. Craig, we move on this episode. We talk roses, flowers, how tough Covington and Masvidal are, and the long shot fighter who is maybe not such a long shot. We begin with John Jones. Craig, what might be the clickbait story of the century in MMA? John Jones has left Jackson Wink, but he has landed at Jackson, not Wink, Jackson's MMA Acoma. Name sound familiar? Of course it does. It's a Greg Jackson gym, and it's in Albuquerque. So like I said, it's really just Jackson, no Wink, which might be a topic for another day. But Craig, it's a move for sure. But in the grand scheme of things, has John Jones really done anything here?
Remember when Cowboy Cerrone had his issues with Jackson Wink and then he went away and he had some success? Remember when Michelle Watterson went away from Jackson Wink and it's been meh? And then she went back and it's meh. But I mean, I think it's one of those things for John Jones. He's in such a weird spot at this point in time. Obviously, we kind of try not to talk about him as much anymore, but you kind of have to talk about him. And the last time that we really had a good chat about John Jones was what? After the UFC Hall of Fame ceremony, where he had some bad times in Vegas. Yeah. I mean, listen, Vegas doesn't seem like a great place to do anything. So just be safe out there on the streets of Las Vegas, especially if you're famous and an athlete. But John, yeah, when I look at this one, is it a huge giant move? I don't know, really. I don't. I mean, how much influence does Winklejohn have over his camp? I'm not 100% sure. I'd kind of like to get your take on that one. I mean, to me, it seems like a little bit of a nothing. The only thing that I will say is, you know, I would worry about quality of sparring partner, training partner. But when you're at that level, you can just pay to get the best people to come in and they'll fly them in, not just, you know, from going like gym to gym in town. But you're going to get some of the best from all around the world to train for your camp. So to me, I really don't understand how big of a move it is.
Well, I don't disagree with what you're saying about how you can get training partners if you need them, but it does cost money. And John Jones, although he's not exactly got the sign out and he's holding a cup outside of any MMA fighting gyms looking for money, he also has had these long gaps in time when he's not fighting. So he certainly doesn't have as much money as he could have. But I think the other part of it is not so much the cost, but just the coordination, right? It's a lot easier to have people that want that are their home gym is your home gym. And that's why these guys end up at these super gyms. Now, the bigger issue I have with this is not what's next for him. And in terms of what you said about Winklejohn, I really think that Winklejohn's kind of just making a stance. He's tired of the John Jones's bullshit. And he's kind of like, you know, I don't want to get into who's morally superior between him and Greg Jackson, but it seems like Greg Jackson is a little more amenable to some of the things John Jones is doing. And Winklejohn seems to have drawn his lines in the sand. The bigger question for me is I got some experience with addicts. It's a conversation for another day, that one. But I will tell you this. When someone is an addict, they find any number of ways to sort of try to prove to you that things are different now. And what ends up happening is not – they're very rarely the big thing you would want them to do, right, whatever that may be. It's always like these little – they try to give you a little nibble, right? And John Jones's nibble is, I'm going to leave Jackson Wink, but I'm kind of still up the street. So it's like I'm doing something without doing something. You know what I mean? If he went to, and I'm not advocating that he does this, but if he went to like American Top Team, or he went to Duke Rufus's place, or like he went to Extreme Couture, like if he left the state, then I would almost feel he's a little bit more serious about it. Now, even those moves would have their downfalls because, you know, Extreme Couture's in Vegas. That's no friend of his, clearly. You know, the ATT's in the Miami area. That's no, that wouldn't be great for him either. So I'm not saying that, you know, you would think that a guy as wild as John Jones, New Mexico would be the place for him to be. But clearly he's finding chaos wherever he – and I'm not talking about Kobe Covington. He's finding chaos whenever he wants to find it. So it doesn't matter if he's in New Mexico or if he's, you know, sleeping in the Bellagio. He seems to be able to find something. So, yeah, I'm not crazy about this move, but it is something.
We'll move on, John, and listen. The backstage brawl, three-piece and a soda, the revenge fight. It's going to have to wait. This is big news yesterday as we tape on Thursday. This show's going to come out when, John?
Soon Friday. That's what they say.
That's what they say. That's what they would like. So realistically, Jorge Masvidal, he's out of this fight, depending on if you believe press releases, which say the injury, or you believe the Underground Whisper Network, which is talking Masvidal, Covington coaching the Ultimate Fighter. So either way, it leaves poor old Leon Edwards once again without a dance partner. So should he just wait this one out? Like he's had to wait out, what, every fight for the last 3 or 4 years? Or should he start calling out Khamzat Chimaev's name, which has already started on the other guy's end?
Yes, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, Khamzat Chimaev is our – because Khamzat Chimaev is a smart guy. And Khamzat Chimaev knows if I beat Leon Edwards, next stop, title shot. So, especially as popular as he is. So, I just – listen, man. All due respect to Leon Edwards as a fighter. He's a stud. But, man, I don't see a lot of upside in fighting Khamzat Chimaev. We did not make him our thumbnail of the Boogeyman episode for nothing, man. This is not the guy – you want to be asking for. You'll take him if you have to, because, you know, that's the nature of the business. But, you know, some fights you take, some fights come to you, other fights you go looking for. This is not one he should be going look for.
Nah, I would not take that fight. To me, I mean, Chimaev, Covington, but I doubt Covington takes that fight. Like, there's a lot of people that won't take that fight. Neil Magny wants it, oddly enough, but everybody else seems to be kind of away from it. So for me, if you're Leon, you wait. I mean, obviously today being Thursday, it was just announced that Wonderboy is going to fight Bilal Muhammad. So now you kind of lose two important players in that division. Who else is left? We talked about this last week. Gilbert Burns, does he take the fight? Like Burns, Edwards, we got something there. I'm cool with it.
I wouldn't mind that fight. That's it.
Yeah, I'd be cool with that one.
All right, Craig, we move on. Let's get to 155. Craig, Michael Chandler caught Nell this past week, but he may have failed upward as he's now calling out Conor McGregor and people are taking this fight seriously. Craig, we know about Conor McGregor and wrestlers. So should we take this fight seriously?
I got to think. I mean, did you watch your boy Chael Sonnen's video on Michael Chandler and abandoning wrestling?
No.
You didn't? Oh my gosh. This is a video that I watched. Today being Thursday, I watched this video when it came out. And
for Chael reference, go ahead and drink up, folks.
For Chael, yeah, he talked about the fact that, listen, he was backstage before the big Daniel Cormier, Roy Jones Jr., Roy Nelson fight. And Daniel told Chael that, listen, what I'm going to do, I'm going to force him up against the fence. I'm going to make the fight boring. I'm going to win it so that path least resistance. And what did he do? He did exactly that. And Chael's point of his video is, why doesn't Michael Chandler do that? Why does he seem to think that he has to be this all-action kickboxer, ultimate fighter type of guy when he really has the skill set that he just doesn't need to do that to win fights? But he seems to think that he does. So for Chandler, to answer the question, yeah, of course, we know exactly how Conor McGregor does against wrestlers or Dustin Poirier's. a guy who just happens to be able to wrestle quite well. I would take it halfway serious. I think it's a good fight. I mean, it seems like the wheels are in motion for a Conor comeback. It's something that people seem to say every quarter, maybe once or twice every year. For me, I'm cool with it. I'd like to see the fight, but Conor McGregor being ranked in the top 10 of the UFC's lightweight division, I'm tickled pink when I see that one.
You know, listen, I'm with you. Here's the problem. Conor McGregor is too smart of a fighter to not have at least some sort of wink, wink assurances that this fight's going to stand on the feet to waste his time with Michael Chandler. Now, I agree with Chael about Michael Chandler and any of these guys, Johnny Hendricks, all these guys that fall in Tyron Woodley, that fall in love with the feet. I agree with what he's saying. The pushback that I would give Chael, at least in this instance, is he went after trying to take down Justin Gaethje. He just didn't have any success. Prior to that, yeah, I'll say that, you know, in other fights, he should have been taking a different approach. But I don't know. For me, I just can't imagine Conor taking this fight after what Khabib Nurmagomedov did to him and falling into the trap of even Chandler publicly sort of baiting him into a stand-up fight. I don't think that that Conor would fall for that. I think that's the only way Chandler gets the fight, and I think he loses a stand-up fight. So for him, it's like, yeah, if you're Chandler, the place that you're at in your career right now is you're fighting the lesser top 10, top 15 lightweights, or you're chasing this fight with Conor where you have just enough. He's at the good point in his career where he's got enough relevance. There was a high-profile win recently enough to get Conor's interest, but he looks vulnerable. He looks a little wounded, and Conor might want to jump on that. So that's he's right in that Conor's wheelhouse, but I don't think Conor wants to fight a wrestler.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how effective do you think full-face ice masks are?
7.
7? Well, good for Michael Chandler. All over the socials with that. John, we move on. Kamaru Usmani defeated Colby Covington this past weekend, and his boss, Dana White, is saying he's the greatest welterweight of all time. Henry Cejudo is saying that he needs another belt to legitimize his legacy, and Usman himself is saying that if he stacks $20 million someday, his daughter is going to ask him where he was all those years. All this while passively, aggressively campaigning for a Canelo fight. So, John, what do you think should be next for Kamaru Usman?
You know, I go back and forth with this. You know, I saw some people were saying, you know, one of the headlines was that he's always going to be chasing George St. Pierre's ghost. And I think that if that's the case, because even if he does, it's weird. Even if he were to break all of St. Pierre's records at 170, St. Pierre still has the 85 belt. So he'll always, somehow weirdly, the 85 belt will make St. Pierre a more impressive welterweight, make his legacy more impressive because they're both at 7. I just think that he just has a lot of ground to cover when it comes to, you know, St. Pierre's on sacred ground. St. Pierre's it's not just that it's not one of these divisions like heavyweight where you're just sort of taking over a mantle for somebody and you can break records. You're taking a guy off of Mount Rushmore. You're removing his face from Mount Rushmore and chiseling yours in there. See, GSP is a Mount Rushmore type of athlete when it comes to MMA. So I just don't know. I think if you're him, it depends. You know, if he wants to stack the millions, there's certainly a path to that. If he wants to get another belt, where are you getting another belt better at, 55 or 185?
85, I would think.
Yeah. He's built for 170. He's, for God's sakes, the fact that this guy's listed at 6 foot, I never seen a guy who looks more like 5'8 that's listed at 6 foot than Kamaru Usman. That's neither here nor there. I think that, you know, if his daughter is obviously important to him, so there's that. But I think that he has only a couple of more years of his prime. His daughter's not that old to where, like, if he says, okay, nothing but big fights from here on out, he takes 3 more, you know, maybe he fights Conor. Maybe he – I don't think you're going to get a Canelo fight. But he definitely has a path towards a lot of money and still spending some quality years with his daughter.
Well, I mean, for me, that Canelo fight's silly. To me, you could go the Anderson Silva route, but I mean, look at Anderson Silva. You got a Mike Tyson shirt on right now. Like, Mike Tyson's still fighting in 2021, and so is Anderson Silva. I don't know if Kamaru Usman, like you said, he doesn't strike me as the type of guy that's going to fight for another 10 years between sports like MMA, boxing, kickboxing, whatever it might be. So, yeah, you're right. As far as the big fights that are still on the horizon, you look up and down the list. Like I said already, Bilal Muhammad's got a fight coming up against Wonderboy. Does the winner of that get a title shot? No. Gilbert Burns on the sidelines. Are we going to rematch that? Probably not. Leon Edwards, Jorge Masvidal, that falls out. Where does Covington, Edwards, Shamayev fit into all this? That's the problem. All of those welterweights are in such a weird spot that now we have to wait even longer for Kamaru's next fight. And listen, it's easy to kind of talk about this. He just fought last weekend. It was a 5-round back and forth type of fight against Covington. That was a really good fight. I enjoyed that one. But now he's going to be on the shelf for what? 6 months? 8 months? What kind of a big fight do we have? Like, who's a big enough name at 170 pounds other than Shamayev? Like, I honest to goodness, I don't know. I don't know how you sell a Kamaru Usman pay-per-view at 170 pounds without having another title in the co-main event or a giant, giant fight. Like, I'm talking like your Chandler and Connor. And that even that seems weird to be a co-main event. Connor's never a co-main event. So I really don't know who you go with at this point. Like, it's tough to try and come up with a name.
It is, because here's the thing. You got to figure out what the big fight play is, like you said. So like let's say he's going to try and do what Anderson Silva did, right? What do you do at 85? You fuck around with Kelvin Gastelum? Like, why? I mean, Kelvin Gastelum's a game enough fighter that you don't want to be wasting your time. Like, if you're not fighting for a belt at 85, why play around? You know, he's not going to fight Khabib because, one, Khabib's not coming out of retirement. Two, they're friends. GSP? Trying to get GSP out of retirement, 170. That's where it gets weird. I mean, there's fights, but it's like, you know, you have to find that fight that's going to either get. That's why I respect so much what Henry Cejudo did. He said, if I'm going to jump weight classes, make it for a belt. And he, you know, once he beat DJ and took his legacy a little bit, grabbed that other belt, and then kind of went away for a little bit. Now it's got to be. The problem with doing that, though, is that it's got to be a big enough fight to pull you back out. And that gets tricky. So, you know, if you're in it, you can fight Leon Edwards or Khamzat Chimaev or whatever. I mean, if I'm Kamaru Usman, I'd like to have a 3-fight deal and the third fight Chimaev. That way, if you lose it, you still got the money of the rematch, or you go away for a while. But I wouldn't fight, like, Chimaev next. I'd fight, like, Edwards, you know, and then something like that. Fight Edwards, and then maybe you try to see if you can get a big name to come out, and then Chimaev.
Let us know down below in the comment section.
Craig, we move on. Once upon a time, Israel Adesanya was in a kickboxing match. At the end of it, he was staring up at the lights. The man who put him there was Alec Pereira. This past weekend, with one flying knee, Pereira did the same thing to Andreas Michailidis, which, of course, is everyone starting to count down to a rematch with Adesanya. We talked a little bit about this before the fight, but now we have the result. So, Craig, what's the wink-wink blueprint for Pereira and Adesanya to meet once again?
Don't put him up against a wrestler, because Andreas Michailidis is a bad, bad, bad wrestler. He's a good grappler, but he's a bad wrestler. And look what happened in the first round of that fight. Didn't look very good for Pereira. So what I did, I went over to Tapology, and I brought up the top 50 middleweights in the entire world. And with Alex's big win, he is ranked 48th. Now, this includes different organizations. So below him, Austin Vanderford. Above him, John Salter. So you know what? Let's have a little bit of fun with it. We'll get a little freaky. I'm looking up and down this. There's a lot of different guys that are booked. But realistically, how many fights does he have to have? Because the clock's ticking. He's not a young man. How many fights would you say that Alex has to have before he fights for the belt? I say 3. Is 3 fair? Does he need more?
Well, you know how this goes. 3 is fair unless they're all finishes. If he finishes the next two guys as impressively as he finished this guy, the third fight can be Adesanya. So I'm going up and down. I'm in the same neighborhood as you. Like, either Adesanya's the third fight or he needs 3 to get to Adesanya.
So looking up, Misha Cirkunov, he can wrestle. He just lost his second one in a row. Roman Dolidze pulled out of a fight coming up this weekend. Andrew Sanchez is cut from the UFC. Albert Duraev, he can wrestle. He's going to beat him. Joaquin Buckley, is fighting Abdulrazak Alhassan. Now, Abdulrazak Alhassan is Judo Thunder, is his nickname. He's a black belt in judo, but he bangs. I want to see Alex Pereira fight the winner of Joaquin Buckley and Abdulrazak Alhassan. Abdul is 35 in the Tapology rankings. That brings us up to there. Chris Curtis is at 33, but I anticipate he moves down to welterweight. So then I move up and down through the rankings even more. Punahele Soriano doesn't have a fight booked. He wrestles. You don't want that fight. Phil Haas doesn't have a fight booked. He just got knocked out. He also wrestles. I don't want to see that fight. Zach Cummings, for some reason, is at 24. That's a good fight. But Zach Cummings is a tricky, tricky grappler. He wrestles. Don't want that fight. Here's our next fight. Makhmud Muradov. He does not wrestle. He can, but he doesn't. He's a very good striker. All right, now we're getting into some big names. Once you beat Makhmud Muradov, they're probably going to rank him. I mean, Gerald Mirchart just beat Muradov. He's got a fight coming up against Magomedov, UFC newcomer. Now it's got to be a big name in the top 15. Kevin Holland. You beat Kevin Holland, you get a title shot. So what were my three fights right there? Let's go back through this. Winner of Joaquin Buckley, Abdulrazak Alhassan. Then it's Makhmud Muradov, then Kevin Holland. There's your three. That's the blueprint. You win those three fights, you get Adesanya.
I hate to break it to you. Okay? I don't disagree with that entirely. But damn it, Craig, we both know you do not get to Israel Adesanya without fighting Brad Tavares or Derek Brunson. I don't give a shit what their skill sets are. You got to fight Brad Tavares, and you have to fight Derek Brunson. Now, here's the good news for Perea. Brad Tavares will stand with him. Brunson's a different story. So I'm with you on the first fight. I make Tavares the second fight, and then the third fight, I'm with you. I think Tavares has to be in there.
All right, fair enough. We'll move on from that. I do want to hear from people in the comment section because old Alex, he got a lot of highlights and headlines there last weekend. But we move forward and listen, John. Patricio Pitbull got his wish. His heart is full. His brother, Patricky, in the main event at 155 of Bellator. And you're the expert now. Patricky gets the win over Queely. He looked amazing in that fight. What's next for old Patricky? And don't tell me it's Sydney Outlaw.
It's Primus. I mean, that's how I think that's the fight. But here's the question. If you're Bellator, did you win or lose in this scenario? I know you're trying to keep Patricio happy. But my question is would it have, do you think it's a better promoted fight? Primus Henderson, Primus Pitbull? Like, how do you think they, in retrospect, now that we've had our result? And obviously, we kind of knew this anyway because had Quilly won, it would have been a disaster for them. But do you think now that they've gained or lost?
If Quilly won, it wouldn't have been a giant disaster. Did you watch the event on Friday?
I know, I'm sorry. Colin, Dan, all the guys, CJ, I'm sorry. I had some plans.
Holy crow.
I'll let you guys.
Are you kidding me?
I was carrying the flag there for a minute, and now here I am.
Oh. Okay, so I only watched the main event. Don't I sound like Jeff Wagenheim? Look at this guy. I'm just here for the main event. I'm just wearing Hawaiian shirts on Twitter. But I did... watch the main event, and I tell you something. I went from co-main because I saw the tweet. We were doing something Friday night, but I saw the tweets about Patchy Mix beating James Gallagher, and I went, oh, John Franklin and I were excited about this main event. I'm going to watch this. And listen, you should go back and watch it. I'm dead serious. If not for the fight, just for the walkouts. It was absolutely amazing. So Patricky makes his walkout to some song that I've never heard of and probably never will again. But Peter Queely walks out to Zombie, and I'm telling you, Ireland was rocking, and everybody was on their feet. They were singing the song. Everybody in the crowd was singing the song. And then when they were, you know, Michael C. Williams is doing his thing, everybody's still singing the song. And then the fight starts, and they're still singing the song. And Peter Queely comes out with this stupid Muay Thai stance with his leg up in the air because he got it almost kicked off in the first fight. And that's when I knew, oh, Patricky's already in his head. He's winning this fight. So if I can answer the question, what's next for Patricky? Yeah, I think Brent Primus deserves another title shot. I'm down to see it. Clash of Styles. That's a fun fight. Brent can get hit, but he's got jiu-jitsu. I'm down for that fight, but I don't think if Queely won, it would have been totally the end of the world.
What's the backstory on Zombie? I get when the Korean Zombie comes out to it, but what's the backstory with this guy? Was he just looking for a song that would get the crowd into it? Or what connection? Is it a nickname? What does he have to do with Zombie? Is there a backstory?
Google the song and what it's about. That's all I'm going to say.
Fair enough. Craig, we move on to sparring sessions. This one, I'm going to encompass all of combat sports, not just MMA. Justin Gaethje had a banger of a fight with Michael Chandler. I mean, really, I thought he had him out of there a couple of times. Chandler showed, you know what they say, confidence and ignorance are sometimes close cousins. I don't know which one he showed in that fight, but, you know, I'll defer to his doctors. But the question becomes, after another great fight, is Justin Gaethje the greatest combat sports action fighter of all time?
Yeah, I think so. I really do. I mean, think of his fights with Luis Palomino. Think of his fight with Michael Johnson. Every fight that Justin Gaethje's had in the UFC, with the exception of what? The Khabib fight, maybe? They've all been pretty fun. I've been like, and I mean, even in that fight was fun if you wanted to see Khabib win and Justin lose. Like, I think he's probably one of the best action fighters of all time. Now, when you say combat sports action fighters of all time, well, I mean, the guy on your shirt, a lot of action in his fights. Like, when you're looking at like a Giorgio Petrosian fight, look at his last fight. He got put on an absolute poster. Still a lot of fun to watch. So there's a lot of great action fighters. I mean, listen, last weekend was actually the first Canelo fight that I missed in a really long time because I wasn't split-screening it like Dana White. I cared more about the UFC's product because I had a fight companion to kind of watch. But there's so many good action fighters out there. I do think Justin Gaethje, like, this guy's in Fight of the Year contenders every single year. So, yeah, for me, I'm in agreement there. But that's another one. Throw that one down to the Underground Whisper Network because I'd like to hear what other offerings the people have on this one.
Yeah, Craig. See, here's listen, I've said this for so long, it's almost like Franklin scripture at this point. But, like, I think Justin Gaethje is the MMA equivalent of Arturo Gatti. I've called him the Arturo Gatti of MMA for so long. It's, you know, again, it's old hand by now. But I agree with that, and I will say this, you know, and I've said this a bunch of times, which is that Jim Lampley said once, the reason why Arturo Gatti is the best action fighter of all time is because it doesn't matter if he won or lose. It only matters how he fought. Same thing with Justin Gaethje. You sort of forget the wins and the losses. I mean, obviously, in the World Series of Fighting, they were all wins. But, you know, you forget some of these fights, whether he came out on top. You forget what rounds he won, what rounds he lost. You just know that he was in there kind of slugging it out. And I think that's his legacy. And I think I can't think of anybody. I mean, listen, there's Sugar Ray Leonard and there's all these guys. There's Roy Jones Jr. There's all these guys that went in there and mixed it up. There's Eric Morales and Marco Antonio Barrera. There's Juan Manuel Marquez. There's Manny Pacquiao. There's a lot of guys who got in there and traded. Bernard Hopkins was an action fighter at times. I think that there's guys that you could name, but I don't think that they came into the fight with the mindset that Justin Gaethje does. Justin Gaethje comes in there that we're just going to – and the biggest compliment I could pay Justin Gaethje as an action fighter is he makes everybody he fights an action fighter, again, with the exception of Khabib. He pulls you in. You're next thing you know, you're in there slugging it out at the, you know, throwing your entire game plan out the window. So for me, it's Gaethje. He certainly has the credentials and the performance bonuses to back it up. All right, Craig, we move on. Let's get to the socials. You know what? Let's do the featured segment first. I had a little bit of an epiphany this week. I had a little bit of an inspiration, a brainstorm, whatever you want to call it. I have a new approach to the featured segment, a new way to look at it. So I went shopping at, I don't know where it was, some drugstore, and I saw this little game that they had. And basically the game was like, give me five or take five. And the whole idea was you get a card and it says you have to name five of each, right? Name five Chris Pratt movies, name five dinosaurs, name five whatever. So instead of doing that, I said, let's do 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. So we're going to go starting at five, going to one. I'm going to ask you questions. They're all number-based. And it's kind of like hitting the speed bag, but it's got a little bit different of a format. All right, let's start here. Number five, or the first one. Give me five knockouts that come to mind immediately.
Machida over Belfort. Lawler over McDonald. Woodley over Koscheck. No, it's difficult. Garbrandt over a Sunsau. That's four. And Volkanovski over Junior Bacon Cheeseburger, Jamie Kennedy. Like, he pounded him out.
Okay, up next. And you can answer this for whatever reason you want. Four fighters you want to go to dinner with.
What kind of a dinner?
Are
we going to the Keg or are we going to McDonald's?
The Keg.
We're going to the Keg. Have you ever been to the Keg?
I have.
Where?
I think here. I think they have one here.
You guys have a Keg?
I think so.
I don't really like the Keg, completely honest with you.
What are we talking about?
I don't like the Keg. I really don't.
You want to go to dinner with? Wherever you want.
Current or former? I'm making this difficult.
Any fighter, living or dead.
Harold Clarence Howard. That's one. And that could be a doozy. Anthony Smith.
Interesting.
From the whole VP side of things, and I know she's got a fight coming up next weekend, Misha Tate.
Okay.
And for the last one, Max Holloway fighting this weekend.
Not too bad. Three strike combination you love to see.
Ah, 1-2 high kick, Holly Holm. You know it's coming.
Two fighters in different weight classes you want to see fight.
I want to see Lerone Murphy fight everybody at lightweight. So Lerone, he's a featherweight. I'd like to see him fight like Drew Dober.
Of all the fights you pick that one. And lastly, one fighter you think could win a title shot right now, but is nowhere near getting a title shot.
Could get a title shot?
No, could win the fight.
Win it.
Could win the fight, but couldn't get the fight.
That one's really hard.
Like, Shamayev would be an easy one. Edwards would be an easy one. But they're closer to a title shot that I'm talking about.
Those yeah, like, I was thinking, like somebody that's obscure that could get a shot at the belt. Like, I said last week.
15 that you just think could beat the current champion. Tom Aspinall would be an example. If you think Aspinall could be one of those guys.
Tom Aspinall, Chris Daukaus, one of those guys. Yeah, that's
there
fair.
There you go. We move on to the socials. Craig, for the gram, let's start with it. Max Holloway said some fighters take the fast track to title shots, but he takes the stairs. If that's true or not, it's a different story. My question is, with a fight with Yair Rodriguez looming, have we undervalued Holloway this whole time in the UFC? And is he really a top five, top 10 fighter all time? That had he come along in a different – like, if he came along before BJ Penn, we'd be looking at him like – and we hold BJ Penn in such reverence. Holloway may have a better resume.
Let's end the conversation once and for all. Who's the greatest MMA featherweight of all time? Craig Allen asked on Twitter the other day. 46% Jose Aldo, 43% Max Holloway. The throwaway votes, 11%. Other, explain below. And when they explained below, nobody said Conor McGregor, but there were a couple of people that said Alexander Volkanovski. So I do think Max Holloway is the second greatest featherweight of all time. I think he's a top 20 of all time MMA fighter, which might sound crazy because there's a lot of really good fighters in that top 20. But undervalued, I guess so. Yeah. But at the same time, look at how big of a favorite he is coming up this weekend. He's somewhere around like a minus 400 favorite to beat Yair Rodriguez, who's coming off a 2-year layoff, having beaten Jeremy Stevens his last time out. So I really do think Max Holloway is undervalued. He always seems to, about this time of year, late in the year, headline a Canadian card, normally a pay-per-view. So it sucks that we can't have Max this year. But I think he is undervalued. But in Canada, he's a huge star.
This is pushing it. But I think that, like, you know, I guess my point is like, when we look at somebody like GSP, or we look at Anderson Silva, or Randy Couture, like, we rang those guys out. If they were rags, we got every drop of water out of them we could. And appreciated them for everything, hyped them to the bejesus every time they fought. And I'm not saying he's them, but I'm saying, you know, the old saying of like, you're going to miss me when I'm gone kind of a guy, right? We see that sometimes in like we take advantage maybe of like LeBron James. And we don't realize like, I mean, trust me, there's no hesitation in calling out LeBron James's greatness. But do we really understand what we're going to be missing when he's gone? Maybe not. Maybe the same thing can be said about Holloway. And we move on to one Twitter hitter. Let's talk Khabib, Nurmagomedov, and Jose Aldo. Listen, these two kind of have a history. Aldo says Khabib ducked him back in the day. Here's the quote this week from Aldo. He's saying you can't peak again. This is Khabib. But we saw an example with Glover, who got there, lost, got there again at age 42 and won. Completely dominated the champion, took him down and submitted him. Adesanya himself fought Blachowicz for 5 rounds, a pretty boring fight. Two high-level athletes, and Glover, who's older than me, this is Aldo, won. Sometimes Khabib talks too much. He's not doing too much these days. He's retired, so he's looking for attention that way. Listen, Craig, I know nothing's going to come of this feud. I know we're not going to get a fight out of it. I get it. That came and went. But who do you side up with this one? Whose side are you on here?
Well, Jose Aldo is a guy who used to fight at featherweight. The idea always was, like you said, that he move up to lightweight. He chose the path to bantamweight. And past the age of, 38? How successful are bantamweights? Give me a successful bantamweight over 38. I can think of one, two.
How's Cruz? And how's Faber?
Cruz, Faber. And then Frankie looked good until he didn't against Marlon Vera. And then I have one more for you. Can you even guess my guy? And it is one of my guys.
The other successful bantamweight over 38 years old?
Ronnie Yahya.
There it is.
Give me that. Yeah. There's not many of those guys that are in title contention. I mean, yes. Listen, Frankie is ranked. And I mean, Dominic Cruz is always lingering out there. But I don't see Aldo being a successful bantamweight past 42, nor do I see him being a successful featherweight past 42, nor do I see him even sniffing a fight against Khabib at lightweight anywhere near when he's 42.
Quick question, out of featured segment, but quick question. If you had a choice and you could have got Nurmagomedov versus Holloway, and put your brain in the time when these fights were proposed, Nurmagomedov versus Holloway or Pettis versus Aldo? At 55, which would you have preferred?
Pettis Aldo at 55, 100%.
That would have been good because I think there was a rumor when Pettis was champ. All right, we move on to posting of the book. Craig, former All-Star point guard Darren Williams and future Hall of Fame running back, if he's not already, Frank Gore, are going to fight each other on the undercard of Jake Paul, Tommy Fury. What is your level of interest for this fight?
John, how many teams has Frank Gore played for in the last 5 years?
A bunch.
A lot of them. I thought he was on a roster this year. I just figured, you see Frank Gore, you figure he's like a third stringer for the Jets or the Giants or some team that sucks. And for Deron Williams, this is a guy like Matt and I were talking about this when we saw that it was announced. I think it was Monday night there were rumblings in this one when we were filming the picks and predictions. And Matt's like, who would have thought if you told me 10 years ago that Deron Williams and Frank Gore would be fighting? Would you believe them? No. Also, Deron Williams, he's going to win. 100% he's going to win. Why is he going to win, John?
Tell me why.
Because he's part owner of Fortis MMA. He's going to win.
That's true. Yeah, I forgot about that.
That's the only reason why.
I'm with you. I think that also, 10 years ago, if this fight would have came up, we would have thought it was a complete shit show circus, and now
it still is.
Well, it is, but it's a little bit better marketed. We're a little more accepting of it now in our society. Just like when Vine went away, who would ever thought that something similar in it would have came back in the form of TikTok and it would have been much more massively successful. All right, Craig, we move on to start the conversation. I don't have a huge intro for this, but listen, there's a lot of backstory to it. There's a lot that goes into it. A simple question is: there are claims that Daniel Cormier is biased as an MMA announcer. He's certainly one of the best. Do you think Daniel Cormier is biased? And if so, how should the UFC handle his bias in terms of should he be taken off of fights that his friends are – he should not commentate the fights, should not commentate the cards. How do you navigate this? What are your thoughts on the whole Cormier is biased narrative that's kind of all over MMA right now?
Ah, it's awkward, John. It's awkward. I've talked about this one a lot. I think he's really biased on a lot of these fights. Because, I mean, the awkward thing is, like, if I look at the UFC 267 card that he was a part of, he has inside knowledge because of the people that he trains with and the gym that he's at of Tigir Ulanbekov. So in that fight against Alon Nascimento, we're talking about Tigir. Petrovsky's a wrestler. He's taking on Hu Yao Zhang. We're going to talk about Petrovsky a little bit more, so on and so forth. That one's fine. All right, now we keep going up the card. Zubair Takugov's fighting Ricardo Hamosh. I hardly heard anything for Ricardo. And listen, I know he lost that fight, but like, what was Daniel calling Takugov? He's calling him Zuba. Like, we're buddies, we're pals. We're like, you gotta kind of separate it a little bit. Like, I get it. The weird thing is, like, I listen to, again, football. Troy Aikman and Joe Buck do games.
I was gonna go ahead.
And sometimes they'll end up doing a Cowboys game. But you don't hear Troy Aikman rooting for the Cowboys.
Hold on now. Wait a second. It depends on what fan. This is what I'm glad you brought this up. Because I was going to bring it up if you didn't.
Well,
I
just want to say this really quick. I don't know if you listen to Joe Buck outside of like when he's doing football or baseball. And this is the craziest thing. I never liked Joe Buck. I'm dead serious. I didn't like Joe Buck. I hated Tim McCarver. Hated him. I thought he was terrible. And I didn't like Joe Buck either. And then I listened to Joe Buck on a couple of different podcasts. And he was on Smartless. I don't know if you listened to it.
Love that. I like podcast. It.
Okay. Love did you listen to that episode? Because Joe Buck actually seems like a regular, halfway decent person. Like, he's not just that guy that you see
on
TV. He's
got a podcast of his own with Kurt Russell's kid.
Haven't listened to it. But on that and on the other podcast I listened to him on, he talks about it. He's like, listen, all the fans hate me. Because when I'm calling a national game, I root for the first touchdown that's scored and I make a big deal out of it. And then when the other team scores a touchdown, I make it as big of a deal because I don't root for a team. I'm just calling the game. Troy does pretty well the same thing. Or Tony Romo even. Romo, when he's on the call, he does a lot of Browns games. Those guys don't focus on one team or the other team. They just call the game. I wish it was a little bit more like that in MMA, but that's too much to ask for, I guess.
Well, I guess that's the question. The question is because, listen, I'm a Giants fan, so I think Troy Aikman, I don't want to say he roots for the Cowboys, but he, excuse me, he's a little bit, seems like he's a little extra critical of teams he either played or teams that have played the Cowboys, whatever. That's from the perspective of a Giants fan. So I guess my question is all this Daniel Cormier biasness coming from the other side of fans who are fans of the fighters he's going against? And is it something that happens so rarely that, like, when, you know, Aikman calls a lot of games, occasionally he gets a Cowboys game. Seems like he calls a lot of them, but he calls a lot of other games as well. So is it something that happens so rarely that doesn't matter? Or is it something that needs to be addressed?
I think it's something that I just notice too much because I think too much about it. But that, the whole, like, Zuba thing, like, that really bugged me. And then up
what's the harm in it, though? What's the harm in him commentating one of his friend's fights?
The harm of it is you get a big pay-per-view card like that, and you get, like, the most casual of MMA fans, the fans that if you're paying attention right now and you barely watch MMA cards, thank you. Thank you for tuning in to Early Stoppage. We appreciate it. But if you get somebody like that who tunes in for a fight, you might kind of wonder, oh, was the other guy not that good? Why is this fight happening? How do these guys know each other? It just kind of confuses things a little bit. To me, I wish it was a little bit more, you know, unbiased. Like, Bisping will have a little bit of bias for the Ruka Sport fighters, but by and large, it's not too bad. Brendan Fitzgerald, John Anik, when they're on the call, they don't really let that show whatsoever. Like, it's just, you start inserting former fighters, certain people, so on and so forth. You're going to get a little bit of that. It's going to bleed through either way, but I just wish it wasn't so apparent.
You know, I'll say this.
You got to learn what significant strikes are. Sometimes they don't make sense, but those numbers matter.
I'll say this, and this kind of goes to what you just said. I think that if we're going to be critical of Joe Rogan for building a narrative that fans then take off on, and it becomes the thing that people think based on that. So if Rogan's building a narrative in a fight and the fight ends and you're like, well, I thought this guy won. The commentators have been saying this entire fight that he was winning. There's a danger in it, in that now the fight ends. The judges call it one way, which who the hell? I mean, the judges are the judges. But, you know, and then Cormier has built this narrative that his fighter was looking more impressive, or the narrative is this is what he's looking to do and he's doing it, but he still may be losing the fight. So I think that's the danger, is that now we're building this narrative for fans that a fight is going away that's not going. But listen, Rogan doesn't necessarily have those relationships, and he gets accused of it as well. So it's not necessarily because Cormier has the relationships that narrative is built. All right, Craig, let's move on to Finish Strong. A lot of women fights and fighters on my mind this week for Finish Strong. I got Cyborg has a fight coming up. Do you care?
Do you know how big of a favorite she is for this one?
Tell me.
So she opened an average minus 1,200. She's minus 3,059 for this fight against Sinead Kavanaugh. Certain sites, what is this? It just says ref. Minus 5,000. Sinead Kavanaugh is 2-2 in her last four. Obviously, she's won her last two fights, but it's a squash match if I've ever seen one. It's a bad fight. Like, I'm more interested in Pam Sorensen and Arlene Blenko than I am for this one. And it's on
Kayla
the same
Harrison
card.
Kayla Harrison is negotiating with Bellator. Any chance she leaves PFL?
Yeah, for the challenge of it, yeah. I'd take the money, but for the challenge of it, yeah.
What's the fight in Bellator? Cyborg? I mean, is that it? Is that what she's going there for?
That's got to be it. I mean, what'll the introduction fight be? Leslie Smith and then Cyborg?
Yeah. This one's weird because we didn't mention her during the podcast. It's kind of funny the way I put it. Can we give Rose her flowers? Do you think Rose Namajunas is the female version of Max Holloway? That she has this, her resume isn't as deep as Max's, but meaning that she's this person who we're maybe underappreciating as far as like it's all about Amanda and Rhonda and Misha and Shevchenko, and quietly Rose is just sort of, you know, everybody, they're lining them up and she's knocking them down.
Yeah, but I mean, the trouble is for Rose, she came into the Ultimate Fighter at what? I think 2-1 was her pro MMA record. And then the Ultimate Fighter was what? Years and years ago?
Yeah.
And her record now is 12-4, and Max Holloway's 22-6, and he fights a lot. That's the trouble for me. She just hasn't fought a lot. I think she looked good on the weekend. It was still a close fight, but I don't know. You got to be more active. That's the only thing.
So we talk about the push and the mandate from the masses, the push from the promotion. Khabib Nurmagomedov says, Justin Gaethje, just shut up and let Makhachev have the next title shot. What's Craig Allen say? Who's got the push? Who's got the mandate?
Gaethje's got the push, wouldn't you say? From the fans.
Well, that's the mandate. So the mandate from the fans is they want to see Gaethje. God. I know, it's tricky. I guess my question is, okay, you're now President Dana White, you know, has gone on to greener pastures, whatever that means. And Craig Allen's now running the UFC. Who's a better champion? Islam Makhachev or Justin Gaethje?
You rock him, sock him. You put Gaethje in there. You have a little bit of fun. And then he fights Makhachev and he loses. Makhachev's champ for a long time.
I think Makhachev, it depends on what you thought Khabib was in terms of marketability. I will say this. If Makhachev's the champ, Khabib's never coming back. If someone else is the champ, you might be able to throw enough money at him. But if Makhachev's the champ, you'll never see him again. Maybe at 170. But, yeah. All right, Craig, anything from you? What do you got?
What do you want? Fight announcements? Let's go to Marcel Dorf's Instagram. Kyle Daukaus' fight fell out this weekend against Roman Dolidze. He's going to fight Julian Marquez next year. How excited are you for that one?
I can't contain myself.
Oh, come on. My guy, Mateusz Gamrot, he's going to be fighting Carlos Diego Ferreira. How excited are you for that one?
I'm excited about.
Israel Adesanya's male model buddy, Carlos Ahlberg's got a fight booked against Fabio Chiarot. Is that one that gets you excited?
Look at me.
That's about it. I mean, from last week to now, not a lot of big fight announcements. Like, Silvana Gomez-Juarez is going to fight Vanessa Demopoulos. Excited for that one?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You got anything for me?
I got nothing for you. Listen, today's Veterans Day in the United States. I was a veteran. I had a good time today. Spent some time with my son. We ran around and did some, got some free stuff that they like to give to veterans in the United States. Update on the running for the month. I've still hit all the numbers. I'm good to go. I am not sore, but I am bored with the process of having to run every day for 3 miles. So that's it's I don't want to say it's that's the part, it's the mental aspect of keeping myself interested in it.
Do you get to cheat on a treadmill, or do you, are we doing hills?
Oh no, I'm on a treadmill for sure. Every day. Partly because I don't want to figure out where the trails are and map them all out.
And do you have to watch out for like scorpions and weird animals on
those
trails?
There's scorpions all around my house. We spray for them all the time. Coyotes.
You spray for them?
Yeah, we got to spray for them.
Ew.
We call somebody out and he sprays for them.
Good to know.
So yeah, everything's good on the Franklin front. I will, we'll do our best, those folks. If you stuck around this long, you deserve to hear. We're going to start getting these out on time. You guys that need them on Fridays. All right, guys. Craig can be followed at Craig Allen FFP. I can be followed at SM Cornerman. The fight has been stopped. We'll see you next week. Craig, say something witty.
If you're in a dry, hot place in the desert, make sure you spray for scorpions.
See you next week. Peace.